Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better on this week's episodes. In the red corner, it's From Russia Without Love, as Schwarzenegger's Soviet-built Terminator, sorry, actual human policeman, doesn't see eye-to-eye with James Belushi's slobby Chicago cop. At least not initially, but by the end they do, despite neither character having changed at all. From 1988... it's Red Heat.
Look, just out of curiosity, how do you Soviets deal with all the tension and stress?
Vodka.
Police Captain Ivan Danko came from behind the Iron Curtain. Now, he's about to team up with the most unpredictable cop.
How you doing, honey?
Drop dead.
Thank you.
On the streets of Chicago.
While in the blue corner, Raymond Tango is a slick, sharp-suited stockbroker come L.A. cop, while Gabriel Cash is a ripped T-shirt-wearing, sort of slobby L.A. cop. I mean, they couldn't make him too slobby because he's also the romantic lead. What am I talking about? This film has no time for romance, at least not with girls. From 1989, it's Tango and Cash.
Meet Ray Tango. He likes money.
Easy come, easy go,
but doesn't bother with cash. Meet Gabe Cash. He won't dance around trouble and doesn't mind stepping on toes.
I hate you karate guys.
Two of LA's top rival cops are having a good time staying in rhythm.
You know me, huh?
Yeah, I hear you're the second best cop in LA.
That's funny, I hear the same thing about you.
So what connects these two films and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
The Kraken.
Hello, Clash Podders. Cocaineum! I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
And this week on Clash Pod, we are joined by a very special guest to handle this monumental clash. Broadcaster, host of Absolute Radio's breakfast show and massive movie fan, it's the delectable Dave Berry.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Poddlers. Lovely to be involved. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. Just so people know, you and I have known each other for roughly 98% of our professional career.
Exactly right.
And we have podcasted together before. We were on the Empire podcast discussing Die Hard.
Yes, and the fact that I believe it isn't a Christmas movie.
Oh my God.
And then, yes, thanks, Vicky. Yeah, then Alex went about shooting me down for a whole hour and then I left in tears. So I hope this goes slightly better than the Empire one.
And you do know Red Heat is a Christmas movie.
Yeah, sorry about that. But I did make up for it by the last podcast we went on. We drank our body weight in wine live on air.
That was a massive mistake. Kate Thornton, she's got this kind of wholesome image, hasn't she? But she invites you into a tiny booth and just gets you drunk beyond your wildest dreams.
She did a number on us. Now, although I didn't...
Have you heard that podcast back?
I refuse to listen to it because...
yeah, don't do it, man, because by the end it's a mess.
Isn't there something about creating a land of dogs?
Yeah. The land of dogs. We get Kate to do the voiceover for our new movie idea, Land of Dogs,
yeah.
Which... just to get it underway, might be slightly better than Red Heat, but we'll discuss that.
And of course, I didn't mention it in the intro, but you are a podcaster yourself. You have Dave Berry's Dad Pod. How's that going?
Very good, thanks, my friend. Yes, it is back for our third series on the 13th of May. Please do download. If you're a parent, or if you're expecting kids, or you're just interested in celebrities talking about their kids, it's the podcast for you.
Lovely stuff. So you picked one of these movies this week. Which movie is your choice?
So my choice is Tango and Cash. When you very kindly invited me onto the podcast, I just don't think that Tango and Cash is talked about enough in modern media. And I wanted to change that with your help. and so I have really fond memories of it.
Yeah.
But I haven't revisited it since I was a boy. And that's what we're going to be discussing when it comes to Tango and Cash.
Playing with fire, isn't he? Because, I mean, we do this a lot. We think nostalgia is going to have survived and actually produce a good movie on the show. But we'll leave it at that for the moment. So I threw the other movie into the mix. I was going to say we, but it seems only fair to hold my hands up and say I threw Red Heat into the mix.
If I can show Vicky and Chris my top notes, it says, Red Heat, Alex made me do it.
That's on the top of my notes every week.
You know, he's like, we're going to do Red Heat. I was like, I don't want to, Alex. I don't want to. He's like, don't you forget who the daddy is. This is my podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's for the same reason that you said that. I haven't seen it since I was a boy. So there you go. We'll leave it at that for the moment. This week, it is Red Heat versus Tango and Cash. The clue I gave for this pairing on last week's show was the original Odd Couple and Brian James. Chris then followed that up on Twitter with
something about them featuring a muscular mismatch cop.
There you go. And the guesses on our Twitter came rolling in at ClashPod. We're also on Instagram at ClashPod. A couple of wrong guesses first, but interesting pairing. See what you make of these. Russell says, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot versus Last Action Hero.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Or, don't like that, Meme Fiend has Stop or My Mom Will Shoot versus Kindergarten Cop. Mm,
that makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, that would be, I guess the connection is bad Sly and Arnie movies, or considering this week's pairing, some might call them worse Sly and Arnie movies, but not me. Congratulations, though, to the right answers. Anthony Peacock, Mark Shea, who says, it's Tango and Cash versus Red Heat, isn't it? This is the death of my Cold War duo, Rocky IV versus Red Heat.
Yes, but we have plans for Rocky IV, don't we, Alex, that we've discussed?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And it'll be a while as well, because we've just done Rocky.
Yours and my plans might be different.
No, sure. No, you told me yours. Oh,
well,
I'm cool with it.
I'm going to tell Mark as well. Full transparency, Mark. I am going through every possible Rocky IV permutation and killing them off one by one until only Rocky IV and Robot Jocks remain as a viable pairing, because that's the one I want.
Wow. Aren't we also waiting for Robot Jocks to become available somewhere?
Yeah.
There'd be some way of seeing this film that only you and I have actually seen.
Yeah.
Chris, I was put through Robot Jocks outside. And I said to Vicky, I felt like I was 9 years old in a playground as Alex animatedly took us through blow by blow what happens in that movie. But and then this amazing bit, and his fist comes off, and there's all these people, and they're dead. Like, I can't believe it. And Russia are going, no, nuclear war. And then he got on his bicycle and just pedaled off.
There were at least two spoilers in that, so.
Sorry.
Right. He is our previous winner. He got the correct answer first this week. Congratulations to Paul Logue. Your prize is a can of Tango or the Cash equivalent.
Oh, look at his little face.
Oh, I took a break after I wrote that. Right, let's do the connection section. What connects these two movies? What have all of you got?
I've got, why wrap cocaine in plastic when you can put it straight in a leg or in a tanker?
Yeah.
No wrapping.
Yeah.
Unhygienic.
Yeah, and plastic saving the oceans, right?
Yeah, so it's eco-coke.
Because you care about the fish.
I do, a bit.
Well, as well as cocaine in unexpected places, you've also got guns in unexpected places, up the armpit and in the shoe.
Hmm? I've got playing chicken with massive vehicles, Red Heat, it's buses, Tango and Cash, Sly plays chicken with a tanker. Bums on parade. Red Heat opens with a lot of bums. Tango and Cash have a bum-filled shower scene.
Cross-dressing. You've got a nurse and a Kurt Russell.
Don't get me started on that.
We'll get there.
Perestroika, which we don't talk about enough, but we should.
Wow. How you found that in these two movies as the subject we want to talk about?
Cops who aren't bothered about Miranda rights. There's a lot of Miranda rights action in these films.
Yeah, both films open with men flying through windows.
Oh,
yeah, out of the bathhouse mm-hmm. and out of the tanker. Professional female dancers in jeopardy.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
One better than the other, I think. Mm.
Gina Gershon and Terry Hatcher are dancers in danger, which is also the name of a movie I plan on pitching.
Yes. Right?
Have a listen. It's a group of dancers, a troupe of dancers who are kidnapped by some terrorists and have to escape, each using their individual dance technique to foil the terrorists. It's like Die Hard, but a musical.
It's a really good idea.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Terry Hatcher's dance routine in Tango and Cash is the most 1980s thing I've ever seen. And I was in the 1980s for a period of my life.
It's so beautiful. It's like a PG strip club.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I've got loads more, but I think we should just get on to the film.
Great stuff.
All I wrote down was prison for that. You guys really went into the minutiae of it, and I respect that, and that's why you host the pod. I just wrote in capital letters, prison!
It's a good one, though.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's maybe the best one.
Yeah.
It is. Right then, let's get into this. So on Thursday, Chris will be dancing into the room to give us our money's worth with Tango and Clash. Tango and Clash. I've ruined my own joke. But today, Vicky turns up the heat with our first cop duo. V takes us on a journey.
Okay. In the Soviet Union, circa 1988, there are absolutely no drugs, which is why Moscow militia captain Ivan Danko absolutely has to go all the way to Chicago to stop the George and Russell Crowe sending drugs to Russia. Otherwise, for the first time ever, there'll be drugs in Russia and everyone will become addicted to drugs. Danko teams up with Cold War enthusiast art in this country, Ridzik, a man who hates paperwork and women, especially when they're vulnerable dancers or men dressed as female nurses, because in Chicago 88, there's no such thing as male nurses, so to pass as a nurse, you must wear a dress. Anyway, Danko's got a key that Victor must have to unlock his drugs because there are no locksmiths in Chicago, apart from Ridzik's brother-in-law, but to be fair, Victor didn't know that. So there's a hunt, a chase on buses. Victor shoots Danko about a million times, but unbelievably misses. So Danko shoots Victor. Ridzik weirdly doesn't grumble about the resulting paperwork, missing a clear open goal there. Then Arnie goes home, presumably to watch the dissolution of the USSR and the resulting partial embrace of capitalism just 3 years later, thinking the same as everyone watching Red Heat. What just happened?
Very good.
Thank you.
Very good, Vicky.
That was good.
Marvelous. I have to take a breath. Mm. Yeah, Sue, I thought I'd seen this film, and then after the sauna fight, I realised I hadn't.
After the sauna fight?
Yeah, I was really with it, and I was like, I haven't seen this film.
No.
What about you?
So this came out when I was 11, and I think even then I knew that there were good Arnie films and bad Arnie films, and this one didn't particularly interest me. But then it seemed to play on ITV during the 1990s every Saturday night. Like, it seemed to be on all the time. Yeah, all the time. And so I caught it one of those evenings. Never revisited, never thought I would revisit it until today.
Dave?
I had never seen it before until you pushed my arm up behind my back and made me watch it. But I think what you're saying is absolutely right, Chris. There's good Arnie movies and bad Arnie movies, and bad Arnie movies, should I say. And maybe there's just a sixth sense that we all have in us. It's not like about, you know, having a culture or an education when it comes to filmmaking. Even at the age of 10, you can just go, nah. But I mean, I really enjoyed the opening. Apart from the fact I've been to Russia, just putting R's backwards, as they do in the title sequence. When I checked into my hotel, I didn't go, it's Dave, B-E, backwards R, backwards R-Y, for a week, please. So that's not actually speaking. I thought not having subtitles was a bold move.
I was going to ask you this. I put subtitles on.
So they're really
infrequent. And there are some really major plot points in those subtitles. Yeah.
So the film doesn't have subtitles?
I don't think the original film, the Russian language, is not subtitled.
So wow. It is. Well, here's the thing. When they transferred it to DVD, for some reason, they didn't put subtitles on it. So the original theatrical release, you are meant to be able to understand what the Russians are saying.
Because there's quite a lot of talking.
There's loads of talking.
I would explain why it doesn't make any sense.
I had to watch the first 10 minutes twice because I was I'm sure this is too long for not knowing what the fuck is going on.
If it didn't have Arnold Schwarzenegger in it, you'd think it was an art house movie. Watching that opening 10 minutes.
There are entire forums on Reddit devoted to people bemoaning the fact that this is one of those DVDs where you have to put all subtitles subtitles on, so you can't just subtitle the foreign language. You have to subtitle the whole movie.
I was going off and on, but by the it's on Netflix now. That's where we watched it. Surely Netflix could have put the subtitles back on.
But they just transfer the DVD copy over to
Netflix. They can add subtitles
Netflix.
If they want to. They can afford it.
The thing as well is, because there's English-speaking actors speaking in foreign languages in film, and the one that always comes to my mind is Michael Fassbender in Inglourious Basterds when he's speaking German, and it's beautiful, it's poetic, it really is someone in command of the language with incredible acting abilities. And then there's Arnie, who is exactly the opposite of that.
There are moments in this movie where I swear he's doing an Italian accent. It's so weird. I haven't seen this, so I thought I'd seen this. I think I was about 7 or 8, and I remember it being on in the room because I remember immediately seeing the sauna sequence at the start and all those naked bodies, and genuinely knowing, even now, that is the most naked flesh I'd ever seen on screen.
Yeah. It's like a swingers virgin active, isn't it?
It's crazy. Now, I at that point remember thinking, great, I shouldn't be watching this. But I can't remember any of the rest of the movie, so I wonder whether I was thrown out. So I watched it again this time, and speaking of the middle of the movie, that is not evidence as to whether I watched it before, because just not remembering it doesn't say that I didn't watch it.
No, there's a thing with a bathhouse, and there's a thing with a bus, and then there's nothing in between.
This felt like a first watch for me. So tell us about the history of the movie, V.
So there's not too much. Let's just run through, like, it's sort of Genesis, if you will. So writer-director Walter Hill.
That was something that was never said in the pre-production meetings about this movie.
There's not that much on the internet. So Walter Hill, who by the time of Red Heat has done lots of things, but The Warriors, 48 Hours, most importantly, and Brewster's Millions, maybe more importantly, he receives a script by veteran writer Harry Kleiner, so he of Bullet. And Walter Hill was second AD on Bullet, and that's where they met. There was a sequence in the script that Walter Hill loved, but he didn't love the rest of the script, so he just lifted it. And to be fair, he did pay Harry Kleiner for it. Took that scene to Arnie, who he'd wanted to work with for a while, together with this idea he's got of a Russian cop in the US. So what is the scene? Do you know this?
Cocaine him.
Arnie says, yeah, but then that's it. There's no script. It's just cocaine him.
Do you know that that's not even the Russian for cocaine?
I did wonder.
It's just cocaine.
Right.
Cocaine.
Did you know that?
No, I looked it up because I was like, it's such a great word. There is no way it's that good in real life. And it's not. There's a really interesting story behind this because they just translated it really badly. So the original conversation, do you know what? I said it's a really interesting explanation. It's not. I'm going to stop myself.
I really saw the moment you just gave up on that anecdote.
Normally we have to stop him. That's the first time he stops himself.
We've got company.
Please don't stop on my account.
He's finally become self-aware, Vicky. We've been waiting 2 years for this.
I'm now Skynet.
You done?
Yes.
That's kind of it. So,
okay.
They're shooting the script. They rewrite it on the fly. According to Wikipedia, the Writers Guild of America were not too concerned about Hill's methods, stating he does tend to hire a lot of people, but he pays well above minimums. So I think you can tell there's quite a lot of writers involved in this script because the characters don't make much sense to the point they don't change.
James Belushi, it's like, he goes from, in certain scenes, he's like, the people go, that guy doesn't follow the rules at all. And in a later scene, it's like he's obsessed with following the rules. Mm. It's like they just wrote each sequence for whatever that character needed to do in that sequence, which in theory should make for a better story.
Yeah. And that is really all I've got. So should we talk about the film?
I've only got one thing to add. We have an 8-timer on this film. Someone who, it's their 8th film that we've done on Clash Pod.
Okay. Was it the stunt person?
James Horner, Music Man.
I should have known that.
Commando, Aliens, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, The Rocketeer, Jumanji, Deep Impact, Avatar, and now Red Heat. Wow. 8 films.
Wow. Is he leading? Has he beaten John?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's way ahead. Although we've got someone who's hitting 8 next week.
Okay. Okay.
Right, let's get into it.
Yeah.
We're starting with, that's not a hot rock, this is a hot rock. Let's talk about a fight in a sauna. It's a very, very strong opening. The only thing that threw me is, again, but I watched the subtitles this time, he's pretending to be a steel worker. Did anybody know that? No. Arnie is.
Is that crucial that's why to they the
put,
plot?
That's, for some reason, he's like, I can't remember. That's why they put the rock in his hand. They're like, if you're used to working with metal, you can hold the hot rock.
Oh, okay.
And then he smashes that man in the face with it, which is obviously brilliant. The only thing that threw me is, like, he's walking into the sauna, corner and they're kind of expecting him. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like they've said, we'll have a fight, but in the sauna. Mm-hmm.
The thing that really threw me about that scene, and it's one of the boldest things in cinema history, and I never thought I'd say that about Red Heat, is the actor character in that scene who is wearing glasses in a steam room. That is, as a spectacle wearer myself, that is one hell of a bold move, my friend.
It's a great opening, though, just purely because of all the flesh on show. Like, it's just very striking visually. I mean, obviously he'd done Terminator by now, so he's been introed in movies naked by this point. But there's something weirder about the fact that, A, in this sauna, you get something I've never seen before, which is a front towel with a thong rear.
Yeah.
So a thong and a towel, which
I'm sat down, you can't see it.
I discovered they're called thowels.
Just made that up?
No, that's a thowel.
I don't believe you.
Why don't you believe me?
It's just the sort of stupid shit you would make up.
Hashtag thowel. I just felt I should say that.
It's fine. All right. It's not real.
Right.
A thowel is actually what you use on a medieval rowing boat to position the oar. Yep, I looked it up. But it's interesting because the rules in this sauna is if you're a man, you must wear a thowel. If you're a woman, you get nothing. No clothes.
No thowel for you, Missy.
And you must then gather around the water fountain and play in it like nymphs.
I like to think they were gossiping.
It was interesting, I thought, to have actors in that scene that are larger than Arnie. I didn't think that Arnie's ego or his agent or his representatives would allow them to be bigger than him.
I can explain. One of these gentlemen is Sven Ole Thorsen, who I've mentioned previously on the podcast. Can you remember?
Your PE teacher.
No, on our end of days episode. So he's not a household name.
No.
And I'm not saying being friends with Arnie helped his career, but he appeared in both Conan movies, Red Sonja, Raw Deal, Predator, The Running Man, this film, Twins, Terminator 2, Last Action Hero, Eraser, End of Days and Collateral Damage.
Yeah, I've known Alex Zane longer than that and all I get is this podcast.
He's basically Arnie's best mate.
Right.
And he's a bodybuilder and so he gets cast in all these films and that's why there's someone that big.
And also, Arnie was required to lose 10 pounds for this movie. Walter Hill was like, I don't want you crazy big for this movie. It's more believable if you're slightly smaller. And he wanted them to be similar in size because, as it was before they started shooting, James Belushi was a lot slimmer and Arnie was freaking massive. And so James Belushi was then required to put on 10 pounds. So that's why Arnie's slightly less well built.
But you don't get to see him in a thowel. So, no. You know.
More is the pity.
Do you know what I think? First of all, that fight that happens out in the snow has got the best sound effects I've ever heard for a fight. It's like Street Fighter 2 level sound effects every time a punch is thrown. But it's crazy because this guy gets the shit beaten out of him in Arnie's pursuit of where Victor is. And he gets punched and punched and punched. And eventually he reveals where Victor is. And you're expecting him to go something like, he's at his secret base. He's returned to the motherland. He's in his lair. And what he goes is, he left to go to a cafe.
Yeah. So then we go to the cafe. This is the next important scene for me because it's the cocainum scene. So it is the high point of the movie. And that's according to Walter Hill. Walter Hill says, I didn't think much of the movie once he left Moscow.
What a crazy quote. He's like, after this, turn it off.
Yeah. But it is brilliant. Like, if you don't know what's coming, watching Arnie twist someone's leg off and it pops is amazing. It's just weird that I just couldn't get over the fact that the coke would pour out of it. It's just, where is the cling film? It's
I think I saw that happen in a members club in Soho once. I love that scene. I love how, and this is just because of when it was made, but everybody looks like a hipster. Everyone looks like a hype beast in that scene. When Arnie walks in his full Russian military uniform regalia, everyone sat around in a kind of like a little vintage knitwear with like a mustache drinking out of a tankard. It looks like Peckham.
Moscow in the late 80s was a lot like Shoreditch.
It really does. But that is such a good scene. I mean, I think I love the twisting of the leg and the cocaine coming out. And also, it's, you know, the director to say that is a foolish thing to say, but and brutally honest at the same time. But it is good up to the point. The funeral scene is kind of almost Godfather-esque. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the kind of chiming of the bell and there's everyone gathered round and the mute colours. And then I can see what, obviously, is trying to be done, which is then you cut to the contrast of the busy streets of Chicago and they've got the guitar playing or whatever it is. And it's like, it's the 80s! But up until that point, particularly that funeral scene, it's got a great action sequence. It's got some really interesting looking characters. It's got the cocaineum leg and it's got the funeral scene. And then it just kind of evaporates.
Well, what's weird is like his partner, who he's like, it clearly sort of sets them up as friends. With that strange, did you have the subtitles on for the dialogue exchange in the car where he goes, the officers used to call you Iron Jaw. After your fight in the snow, they now call you Round-Headed. Is that a joke about people being able to see his penis from under the towel?
That's what That's what I took from it. Yeah.
Right.
Oh. I missed that.
Yeah.
It's zing.
Which is a weird, great line. But they never, like, once he gets to Chicago, there's no, like, no one sort of, he never goes, I'm here to avenge my partner.
No.
And it's like, this would actually help move this story on and create an emotional heart to it if he was like, he killed my partner, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just not mentioning that.
Well, this is the trouble because there's detail in this film that then took it off. I wanted to watch at in the state I was in on Saturday, whatever it was, an Arnie beating the shit out of people in a sauna kind of film. And then it starts in the cafe where Victor has this huge speech about, you're picking on us Georgians. And it's like, oh, politics. Don't want any of that. Thank you so much.
Boom!
Yeah.
It's a fucking documentary.
But then also, Victor's arrested for running a red light, fine. And someone's turned up from Russia to get him. But then the US cops are surprised later. They're like, he's a fucking rapist and a murderer. And it's like, why did you think that Arnold Schwarzenegger was here to just escort him home for running a light?
We take red lights very seriously.
Yeah. One of my favourite bits is when you meet Art Rydzik. Again, more detail that I don't want about clean heads. I was like, what the fuck? I don't care about that. They're doing, you know, him and his buddies are doing the drug bust. And did you notice the bit where his friend is like, you go first outside the door?
No.
And it's like, before the drugs bust, decide who's going in first. Don't be like, knock, knock, please. Fuck, are you going first? Oh, shit.
I mean, we talk about this a lot, but like how you introduce a character is so fundamentally important to how the audience is going to perceive that character for the entire time of the movie. And make no mistake, this movie introduces James Belushi's character and they're setting up that he's a bit of a slob and a bit unprofessional. What they do is turn him into a pervert in three lines.
Yeah.
He's in the back of a car and they could have done anything. He could have been taking a leak when he should have been staking out, buying some pizza, doing anything. But they choose to have him go, do you think those are homegrown? Do you think those breasts are homegrown?
Fun bag patrol.
It's just like, why is this his introduction? What are we meant to take from that other than he's some sex pervert?
Yeah, but then they double down on that because when they get to the airport, he like literally hassles someone walking past it. I don't even know what he says. It's like, oh, we're meant to think that you're a dickhead. Oh, brilliant. So Art and Danko are working together and it is just one culture clash after another because Arnold doesn't know what humidity is. So the American explains humidity to him. And then you do get the scene that is like the promise of the premise, which is Danko going to interrogate Streak. And he's like, where I come from, we smash the shit out of people.
Yep.
And then setting up Rydzik is like, well, you can't do that because he'll file a lawsuit or something, which he probably won't.
Yeah, we should mention Brian James is another connection, obviously, Streak in this, Rakeen in the other movie.
Oh, yeah.
The Artful Dodger in the other movie.
Oh, offensive to Cockneys everywhere.
Save it for Thursday.
But I do think it's a bit of a wasted opportunity because the Cold War has been briefly suspended in this film and you've got a very big fish out of water and all we can do is breaking someone's fingers and some jokes about, I keep saying humility, that's wrong, humidity.
What do you think of James Belushi in this? Because again, to go back to that introduction, if that was Beverly Hills Cop and it was Eddie Murphy talking about homegrown breasts with that wink in his eye, that cheeky look on his face, you would buy it completely. And they've clearly written it for Belushi and thought maybe he could do something with it. And he doesn't. Now, I like James Belushi. I do think he's a really likable presence on screen. But in this, I don't know whether it's the script that it underserves him, but he is much better in K-9.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's the script because he's likable in K-9 and he has chemistry with that dog. Mm. Whereas he has no chemistry with Arnie. I don't know if the dog is a better actor than Arnie, but he's very dislikable in this film. He needs, you know, we always talk about a Save the Cat moment. He needs a moment where he becomes likable. He does something that makes you root for him.
Yeah, and he doesn't at all.
No, I suppose what they were shooting for was kind of cheeky chappy, and that's what they wanted from the character, a kind of someone who represents the American everyman. But actually what you've got is this kind of like sad, perverse, pathetic loser. It's really difficult to spend any kind of time with.
bit of a twat.
Yeah, that's why. It's simple. In K9, he looks after a dog, and therefore he is immediately likable. Yeah. Can you believe?
He loves that dog.
Can you believe, though? On 20 Rotten Tomatoes, K9, 22%. I just want to say bullshit. That is absolute bullshit. 22%.
That's bollocks.
Unbelievable. 10 years later, though, I didn't remember this until I looked at it. 10 years later.
K9000.
K9-11.
K9-11, okay.
K9-1-1, sorry. That would be a very different movie.
Yeah, K9-11. It can't be that.
Yeah, K911. Yeah, I actually wrote it in a way that I wouldn't say K911. That didn't work. That got shockingly, I got 17% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
In 2002. K9PI, James Belushi's back, shockingly only got 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
But you know, you sometimes think of an actor like James Belushi, I sort of thought, oh, he was kind of big then, and then he disappeared, like, for whatever reason. And he's in a sitcom that we don't get here.
He had a big sitcom, didn't he?
A huge sitcom. Like, ABC put it up against Frasier from 2001 to 2009, according to Jim, he was also the producer on.
Was he in Red Heat, and according to Jim, were they trying to transfer this popular sitcom character onto the big screen?
No.
Is that... No.
No. This was much later. But
it was very much a blue-collar working man he was playing. It was that kind of humour. So it was kind of counter-programming against Frasier.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how you're going to deal with the middle section of this movie, Victoria, in terms of what happens.
Yeah.
Only because I said to Dave outside before we went in, I've never found a plot that is simultaneously so unnecessarily complicated and utterly tedious.
Mm.
It's difficult to care about anything that happens.
Yeah, I didn't. I'll be honest. I didn't understand the dollar bill stuff. The $100 bill.
No idea.
Oh, with the
this ripped
half
in half.
Bill.
Yeah, it's
because
you don't need to. It's kind of a MacGuffin. The MacGuffin is the key.
Yeah,
you don't need the dollar bill as well.
There's
We're
so
running around after two
need.
Things. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So, for instance, they go to prison to interview Abdul Elijah, who's something to do with something, right? Loads of politics there. He's a Marxist. I'm the only true Marxist. Oh, wow. Again, politics. We're in a prison and the prison guard has gone, you're on your own, son, or whatever. No fight. Are you fucking kidding me?
No,
are you kidding me?
You're so right, Vicky. I thought it was going to be Arnie and James versus this army of prisoners, and it wasn't. And that's so disappointing.
Just a lecture on Marxism and then we're out.
Yeah.
Deleted scene. They cut it. There was there was a scene that was meant to be in there. They cut a lot from this movie, which is why the...
None of it makes any sense.
Yeah, the Gina Gershon plot, she was like, when she just she turns up dead
She's
later.
Just dies.
She just dies off screen.
Yeah.
Off screen.
She begs for help and he doesn't give it to her and then she gets killed.
Wow.
It's ludicrous.
That'll learn you.
Yeah, I know.
So was that at the director's behest? Was it all cut out under his guidance?
They shot it.
Oh, yeah, because in the trailer there's a scene where I think Arnie's doing weights with someone in the prison in some sort of competition to get information.
Oh, that's
amazing.
Where I come from, we wear these.
Back home, they call me round-headed.
This kind of homoeroticism isn't going to go down well in a Chicago maximum security prison, Arnie. Just an FYI.
Well, let's talk about Gina Gershon in a minute after a small break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Okay, so Gina Gershon, I struggle with this because we have talked about how dislikable art is, which again, triple downs on. He meets her for about 2 seconds and then says, I'm going to bust that bitch so hard she bounces.
Oh,
what
yes.
the fuck, man? Like, yeah. What's she ever done goodness. To you? I just, and then, I don't know. So are we actually, at this point of the film, it's like, am I really not supposed to like you? Or am I supposed to think... She's a fucking nightmare.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because he is, again, set up as a cop who doesn't really give a fuck. He's kind of like laid back about stuff. He doesn't really care about his job. And yet the minute a woman doesn't give him the information he wants, then he's very serious about his job. And then he's gonna bust that bitch till she bounces.
Just unbelievable. Then the middle section to me was, there was a moment where I was like, is this actually a comedy? So do you remember the bit where Jim Belushi goes off to get some fucking burgers or something, and Arnie punches someone like a carjacker, and he's like sparked out on the pavement.
Yeah.
And then Jim Belushi steps on and was like, oh my God, this is meant to be a comedy. Mm. Is it or not?
No.
That was quite funny, that bit.
Yeah, that's
he
the only.
He says, Do you know Miranda?
Yeah.
And the bloke says no, and then he.
No, I don't.
Him.
Yeah, and then just knocks
that's
him out.
That's quite funny.
Let's talk about the hospital bit, because that's the bit I really want to get to, because at this point, I sort of gave up with like trying to follow what was happening, and then it was much easier for me. So. We're in hospital to interrogate one of Victor's men. Gina Gershon, she's also in the hospital. Why? Don't know.
Well, because she needs to be there.
So, to use the phone.
Well, and to also get in the way of the police investigation. For some reason, she decides to save the male nurse, well, the man dressed as a female nurse.
Yes.
But because what? He's friends with Victor, her husband?
Yeah.
Even though she is very clear by now that Victor is a bad dude, but she still stands in the way. It does allow us to have Arnie deliver one of his greatest put-downs, which is quite simply, he goes, you're stupid! In her face.
I don't remember that bit. Yeah. That's really good. Yeah. I wish I remembered that bit. So a man dressed as a female nurse, because male nurses were only invented in the 90s, apparently, sneaks his way into a room and kills someone. And they've got, like, obviously the heart monitor and the oxygen monitor, and whatever he does to this man kills him instantly. Instantly. Like, it doesn't, the heart monitor doesn't, like, falter. It's like, you're alive, beep,
flatline.
Dead, just straight away.
That can happen. Yeah, there are things that can do that. I've heard.
Sneaked into a hospital.
You draw out the moment a little more, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Go straight to flatline, take half a $100 bill, put it on the duvet and leave.
And then this bit, so Art has eyed up the nurse because he cannot help himself. And then when the nurse is killed, again, just there to quadruple down on his dick nurse, he's like, it's a fucking guy. So just to be like, oh, I feel like a twat for eyeing you up or something.
Yeah.
Hated that.
It's so weird, isn't it? He's just killed someone. and he's more concerned with the fact that he's disgusted at himself for finding a man attractive.
Of course, we have the Copping Tango and Cash hitting on Kurt Russell, which is a much gentler scene when he yells, "What about a three-way?" as they drive off on the bike. So
brilliant. And then there's a little scene here where Art, I hate reports, Rydzik does some reports, and they try to, it feels to me like a scene that was like maybe done afterwards. They try and force like a connection between the two of them. So Art asks Danko about a million questions. So he's like, "Have you got a girlfriend?" "No." "What about your dad?" "No." "What about your grandparents?" And it's like, of people that age, when you meet someone for the first time, do you ever say, "How was your nana?"
Did you see the match last night? Or
just no one does that. No one ever does that.
It's weird. You know, you were saying about a save the cat moment, because I know we're really going hard on Art here, and he doesn't have that moment, but they do still find time in the script to give that moment to Arnie, because you're sort of like, who is this guy? Like, he's this sort of like, he's this stoic Russian guy. He's not giving much away. He's very serious about his mission. And yet they still find time in that car journey to the hospital to have the conversation about the parakeet.
Oh, God, yeah.
Which is
I sort of came to at this point, and all I heard was, is a parakeet feminine? I was like, oh, that's such a good question.
How's your nan? How's your parakeet?
But also, have I skipped over the fucking pointless parakeet alarm? Oh, my watch has gone off because it's time to feed the parakeet. I don't know if you've noticed, you're in Chicago right now, so you can't feed the parakeet. Presumably the parakeet's died.
No, but it's nice because it, you know, suddenly
humanizes him a little bit.
Yeah, this is a guy.
He's no longer a robot. He loves animals.
Okay.
Exactly.
Fine. So at this point, I realised the film genuinely was about Victor trying to get one key back from the most dangerous man in the world, rather than finding a locksmith to bust open whatever he's got his drugs in.
Yeah.
Which is mad, but fine.
Yeah, it's, and getting home in time to feed his bird.
I mean, they even take the piss in the film, because at one point Arnie shoots off a padlock to let Gina Gershon escape. So you're like, so you can shoot off locks. And this movie is based around a lock that needs a key to open it.
Yeah.
And you've just shown me a lock being shot.
But do they know where the lock is at this point?
Victor does.
Victor does.
Victor does.
Victor's like, I need this key, and goes to the hotel room to get the key because it has to be this key.
I feel like he wants to stay in that hotel, doesn't he? Which is, he's very specifically wants to stay in that room.
Yeah.
I just... When I said I didn't want to get bogged down in the plot, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I'll shut up now. I just want to know.
But then we do... So maybe this is a bit of characterisation for Art, because Art's brother-in-law, he's a fucking locksmith. Wouldn't you know? Now, to be fair, I've been back and forth on this scene because this is set pre-internet, right? And in another version of this script, you need some information about this key to figure out that it belongs to a bus station locker. But it's pre-internet. So in another version of this film, they just go to a library, because that's what you do in films like this. So fine, you go to a locksmith and you get a catalogue and you look through it. And there's some characterisation that is very like sort of scarcely set up and not paid off, that Art's brother-in-law is not paying alimony to Art's sister. Who cares? Whatever. Did you get that?
Yeah, I did. But this is, I guess, meant to humanise like Art a bit, because he cares about his sister and the money that... But he delivers it in such a way that he just seems angry that he's being wronged.
And his sister's the only female he doesn't fancy and sleaze over.
Yeah.
Or want or to hate. Bounce. Bust them until they bounce.
Yeah.
But I'd say between that conversation he has with Danko about the nan and the thing about the sister, I do start to like him a little here.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see a bit more in Art. And as this friendship forms between him and Danko, I'm seeing something there. It's about 5 minutes of a two-hour movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the kernel of a movie there.
Mm. Yeah. Also, do you think catalogues like that exist, where it's just every key in the world? And you just immediately find the key and sort of it goes, this is for this locker.
But someone says earlier on, that looks like a locker key to me. So you just run it. You're like, where has lockers? Where has lockers? Oh, fuck it. A bus station.
Yeah.
Do some police work. Anyway, whatever.
Or back to the Swingers Virgin Active. They've got lockers.
You should get in touch with them. That's a really good idea. I mean, they probably do it though, to be fair, like an after hours VIP thing. Let's just get to the bus chase, because that's why we're all here.
You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. The only reason I bring up the hotel shootouts, where
parakeet alarm,
the sex worker's trick gets killed.
Oh yeah,
I thought that's quite gritty and grim. But the only reason to mention it is: did you spot one of the detectives walking down the stairs, interviewing the hotel desk clerk, who's like, "Who's going to take responsibility for this?"
Oh, it's tell me, because I shouted at the telly.
The actor is Kurt Fuller, who plays.
Oh fuck. Just tell me.
The mayor's assistant who locks the Ghostbusters up in Ghostbusters 2.
Of course.
He punched them in the psychiatric hospital.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. By the way, David, in case it wasn't obvious enough, Victoria likes the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I'm getting that. I'm getting that in a big way.
I just had to turn the volume down on my headphones.
Sorry.
Apologies to listeners.
Sorry. God, that's so brilliant. I'm made up for him. Bus chase. Walter Hill said that Arnie can't fit in a car and look normal, so he put him in a bus, which is fine.
Can you imagine having to hear that news? You're just sat in a car like you've done your whole life, and the director's like,
"You look fucking ridiculous."
He's in cars in every other film.
Although if we look through that, how many cars have we actually seen Arnie in throughout his movie career? He's on a bike in Terminator.
Think about it.
Helicopter in Predator.
In Total Recall, he's in the back of that little cab car and he looks stupid. Johnny Gaps looks stupid. He gets on a horse in True Lies to go in a lift.
He's on a horseback in Conan the Barbarian. See him in cars.
He's never been in a car.
See?
And Red Heat wasn't about to be that movie, goddammit.
In fact, he's so angry with cars that at the start of Commando, he pushes one off a cliff.
He does. A nice yellow one.
That's for making me look stupid, pushing it off a cliff.
How dare your car?
Cocanum.
You're stupid. Oh, write that down. I'll use that in a film.
Yeah.
Yeah, so whatever. So a nice callback, which I did appreciate script-wise about where did you... In both films, I think someone says, where did you learn to drive like that? Which no one ever says in real life. Oh, I had lessons. But a nice callback.
And your nan have asked that, are you? How many times did you take to pass? You passed first time. What about your written test?
Yeah, where did you learn to drive like that? Oh, Kiev, the army, whatever. It does mention, and he's got a very good point. Where the fuck are the police? He's like, just when you need a police officer, there's never one around. Two buses are chasing each other through the streets of downtown Chicago. There's not a police officer in sight. Madness. They get out of the bus. It all gets a bit hazy at this point. Victor shoots Arnie 1 million times. And so far in this film, he has never missed. He tries to shoot him a lot. And it either goes through him, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't hit him, though.
Well, obviously.
No, I was preoccupied with the fact that there is a nice callback here, because earlier on, the police chief, Peter Boyle, does say to Arnie's character, he says, I don't want you rolling through Chicago like the Red Army, which is exactly what happens at the end when he destroys the Chicago landmark in a bus. So he's rolling through Chicago like the Red Army.
That's good.
That is good. But anyway.
Give it that, V.
Yeah, sorry. So Victor dies. And I mean, a minor gripe, but Victor is, a lot of this film is Victor's film. He's a good baddie. Is the best way for him to die just getting shot by Arnie against a train?
My feeling was, if you've survived driving a bus that gets hit by a train and exploding, and then you just get shot, I'd be more angry at that. I'd be like, see what I just survived? Yeah. I just survived exploding in a bus train.
I think it's a shame because it starts with the bathhouse fight. You could have just pinned something onto the end, which was as memorable and as visual, rather than just getting, you know, shot to death against this train.
Well, you've got all the nonsense about the Miranda rights and stuff. I think they could do more at the end here in terms of maybe Art arrests him, stops Danko killing him, arrests the guy. Reason Miranda might. And of course, they've set up the gun up his arm and it never pays off. Oh, yeah. Maybe he pulls the gun and then Danko saves Art. Yeah. Or Art saves Danko. One's got to save the other in the climax, because that's what buddy cops do.
Or you do a Lethal Weapon where they both kill Victor at the same time.
Yeah.
Something like that would be good.
Don't have Art start. I mean, that's probably an Arnie thing. Arnie had to defeat the villain at the end on his own. But you can't have the other buddy standing on the sidelines watching. It doesn't. That's not what a mismatched cop movie does.
I mean, they almost get round it with that quite funny line where Art goes, yeah, I'm out. This is all getting very Russian. Yes. So he actively says, by the way, everyone, I'm not involved in this finale.
Yeah. Then they go to the airport. They're still, inexplicably, absolutely covered in blood. So they've not washed their face. They swap watches.
So glad we killed Victor when we did. I had a plane to catch. Non-flexible ticket.
It's the parakeet. The parakeet's waiting.
Where's my key catalogue? I want to read it on the plane.
But then again, so fifth moment in my summation of Art being a bit of a dick. They swap watches. Art's a bit of a dick about it. He's like, I would rather have my watch back, thank you. The end.
Yep.
That's the end of that film. Okay.
Thanks a lot for the recommendation, Alex.
Hey, my pleasure. Because I remember that in 1988, Arnie had his biggest hit ever. Mm. And I knew it was one of two movies.
Yeah.
Turns out it was Twins,
yep.
Not Red Heat.
But yeah. If you'd been told about both these films at the start of the year, the money would have been on this being the good movie, not Twins.
Yeah. Where is this in the timeline? Sorry to put you all on the spot of Arnie's movies. Where does it come along?
Came after Predator and Running Man. So this was just before he went stratospheric in his stardom. So,
but he's got some big hitters under his belt at this point.
Yeah. He's got Total Recall and Terminator 2 just coming straight after this.
And Kindergarten Cop, which was massive, if shit.
Yeah.
No, Twins was fucking massive. Like, it's just... that's it. Do you want to do the bits?
Yeah.
All right. Sure. Best scene, Dave, as a guest, would you like to go first?
Thanks, Vicky. I have gone... My favourite scene is the bar cocaine leg. I know we've touched on it already. There aren't a great deal of brilliant scenes in this, but I've always loved in cinema, and this is kind of a nod towards what I really like, and you see it in John Wick, and you see it in The Equalizer. I like watching our kind of silent protagonists go into places and mess shit up. Mm. And that scene in Red Heat gave me that sense. And that's why I was so excited about the movie that was going to unfold. Mm. But unfortunately, as we've established, it kind of slightly goes off piece in a different direction. Yeah, it doesn't. But yeah, that's my favourite scene. I like the idea of the kind of silent, hard guy surrounded by the baddies and holding his own.
Because it sets up the kind of movie that you expect from Arnie at this point, which 100%. Is like this indestructible force who's going to go into a place and fuck shit up.
And he looks great in that uniform and everything. It's all perfect. Perfectly set.
He looks great in a thowl, all round-headed.
We'll go around the table, actually, like a proper work meeting. Chris?
Well, when we were trying to figure out what film to, when we'd settled on Red Heat, I think I watched it first, and I messaged you guys 5 minutes in and said, we've definitely made the right decision, because I just watched The Sauna Brawl. That's my choice. I then wanted to take that back, because obviously, like Dave said, it doesn't continue of that quality. But I think that Sauna Brawl is really good and sort of a hint at what the film might have been. Al?
It's anything from the first 20 minutes set in Moscow. But I'm just going to go, because Arnie's face is that perfect Arnie face when he goes, cocaine on! I love it so much.
Yeah, that's mine as well. So there we are.
It's Walter Hills as well, and he made the bloody thing.
Yeah, everything else he says is shit.
Yeah.
Most valuable whatever. Let's go this way. Alex?
Arnie. He's great here. And I do think, you know, slightly slimmed down, slightly more vulnerable. I know you make fun of that parakeet scene, but I genuinely think there's a really touching delivery from Arnie where he looks genuinely worried at the idea, like, you think parakeet is feminine? And he's concerned, and it's sweet. And I think for Arnie to play that is unlike any Arnie we'd seen in Predator, Commando, Running Man. It's like it showed a little bit more depth, which was going to obviously come out a lot more as the 90s kicked off.
I must admit that kind of just as I'd pressed play, I'd already written a kind of line about how the irony here is that James Belushi does a lot of the heavy lifting. And I thought I would just use that line and it would be true. But actually, Arnie is the star. He's the most likable one. He's the charming one. He's the funny one. So
literal and the metaphorical heavy lifting.
He does all the heavy lifting. So kind of, given what we've said, you know, we kind of owe Arnie a bit of an apology on that one. Because as you say, Al, I think there's a bit more going on there than we've kind of said so far, I think.
Chris?
Yes, I'm struggling this week, so I'm going for, you've already mentioned it, the font.
Oh, God, I fucking hated it.
The backwards R.
Just turning R backwards and I feel like I'm in Russia.
Spasiba!
That's heavy lifting done there in the credits.
What, so is your MVW going to be Arnie?
No, I've gone for Walter Hill.
Oh, very good.
And I've gone for him, but just purely because of that, again, back to the Russian scene. But as we touched on already, to be watching a buddy-buddy cop movie with a comedy actor in the shape of James, but to see it start with that funeral scene and the bugle solo and the kind of church bell ringing and stuff, and the kind of the scenes that are in the alleyways and the dialogue in the car, even though I didn't understand what the hell was going on, because I don't speak Russian. Let's put the R's backwards. I thought he did made the start of a really action-packed and kind of like stark but good-looking movie there.
Yeah, and then stopped, which is a shame.
Yeah, But it's just nice to know that he could.
Yeah, it is. Mine is Ed or Ross as Victor. Oh, yeah. Do you not think he looks like Russell Crowe? Fucking hell.
No, but I thought he was really good.
He's brilliant.
And I was so surprised because I've seen him other things, but I hadn't connected. I was really surprised he's American.
It's
He's good.
He's got a great look to him.
Yeah,
actually.
He really has.
It's his third appearance on Clash Pod.
He's in Lethal Weapon.
That's the one I know off the top of my head. Yeah. He's in something else that I cannot remember right now, but we have covered
it. I presume he's always a villain, right? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. 90% of the time he's a bad guy.
Swarthy.
Yeah, but he's properly scary. And that little gun, I like all of that.
No, well, that little gun, though, that is Taxi Driver. I'm sorry, you can't just take something wholesale from another film.
Of course you can. What are you talking about?
Do it different. put the gun in the shoe.
Yeah, put it in his mouth.
Sure.
So he's got it on his tongue. What have you got in your mouth? Got you.
10 years of military school to learn to do this with my tongue.
Oh dear. Dave, if you could change one thing, what would you change?
I'm going to keep it short and sweet. Brian James.
Really?
Because I was so offended by his Cockney accent in Tango and Cash. When he cropped up in this, I was devastated. Yeah, I had quite enough. So yeah, I'd get rid of him. I can't see him anymore.
Were you surprised he wasn't English? Who knew?
Could you do me a favour and say the words Mary Poppins for me, please?
I've got two changes, but they're interconnected. So it's a fish out of water story. You can put Arnie in more interesting situations here. With this being East v West, make them American situation. So have the investigation take him to a baseball game and then onto a honky-tonk bar, because I want to see him deal with those environments. Okay. And then make Belushi the fish out of water. So have him go to Russia with Arnie for the last 30 minutes of the film.
That's a good idea.
It's logical.
The Rocky IV training montage. That's exactly right, yeah.
Yeah, I just... this goes back to what you were saying about how the buddy cop system works in these movies. And you just... I think maybe you needed to come to James Belushi earlier, or at least have him have his own vendetta against Victor. So he wants Victor for his reasons. Arnie wants Victor for his reasons. They're kind of competing for who's going to take him down, whether he's going to go back to Russia with Arnie, whether James Belushi art is going to keep him in America. So there's that conflict there. And suddenly you've got a little bit of drama, like whose reason is best? Maybe Belushi lost his partner, Arnie lost his partner, so they both lost someone to this guy. And there's like, we want to get him, but who's going to get him? Something like that. Something that interests me for literally everything after Moscow.
And please have a fight in the prison. Yeah. More prison.
That's my change. Put the prison fight back in. It's crazy. The momentum is all there. It's really disappointing. That's it.
Right then, that is Red Heat done. No quiz this week, Chris, because you don't want Vicky and I to get too competitive in front of company.
Not in front of guests. Not in front of the guests.
Understood.
Thank you, Chris.
Understood. Which means then we need to do a little clue as to next week's pairing, which is coming from you, Chris.
It is. My clue is, if you can make it through the night there, you can make it anywhere.
It's good. It is good.
That's really
Shall I say it again? Because Vicky was laughing. If you can make it through the night there, you can make it anywhere.
I'll sit in silence. You very rarely make me laugh, so you should have been great.
I like it.
Oh, God, we should have just done a fucking quiz. What do you mean less awkward? We have company. Right then, we are back on Thursday to talk about this week's challenger, Tango and Cash. In the meantime, please subscribe, rate, and indeed review us if you had the time. It's a great help. And check us out on Twitter and Instagram at ClashPod. Back on Thursday with more Dave Berry talking Tango and Cash.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.